Former Society Music Director, Dr. Robert Linder. For tickets and more information, please visit the Society's website at hgns.org. KPFT Houston.
As a KPFT listener, you have a special opportunity to shorten on-air fundraising by pre-pledging securely online at kpft.org before the on-air portion of the drive begins. We count on listeners like you to contribute to the success of each fund drive, and we thank you for your generous and continued support of KPFT. Since listeners' support is what sustains the station, on-air pledge drives are necessary to inspire other KPFT listeners to become listener supporters. But wouldn't it be nice if the on-air portion of the pledge drive were a bit shorter? With your online gift, you can help shorten the on-air drive so we can get you back to the KPFT programming you enjoy. Pre-pledge securely online at kpft.org so that we have it in hand in time to create the final on-air schedule. And thank you again for your continued support of 90.1 KPFT Houston. KPFT.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner is on controls, as thank goodness usual. And we have sort of semi-open forum tonight. I have a guest, Chris Sampson, who lately has been making the rounds as a subject of interviews on cyber warfare, WikiLeaks dumps, and other things.
Book writing.
I was about to say, I had not.
Oh, forgotten. Not that one. Oh, this one. Yes, this book too. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, yes, he is writing books. He is co-authoring books. He is assisting in the authoring of books, and I have in front of me a review copy of "Hacking ISIS: The War to Kill the Cyber Jihad" by Malcolm Nance and Chris Sampson. And he's been on the show before. He actually has a long history with KPFT. He used to do a music show.
Since 1991, I think, or 1990 is the first time I came in, and 95 was when I first went on the air with Scott Summers.
But we are not going to necessarily be talking exclusively about cyber warfare.
Sure.
But if you want to call about it, you know, the phone number is 713-526-5738. I have a number of other topics I'm going to run through. And at the end of the show, I have a David Letterman quote from an article that I ran across that's it's a little clunky but interesting. Just excising it as a quote was challenging. Okay, so things that we can talk about. We can talk about Chris Sampson and cyber war. We can talk about the British lawmaker Louise Mensch, who has managed to make news for herself by sort of implying in a sort of roundabout way that Trump might have been wiretapped, which has now morphed into espionage-related microwaves. There was a little piece that I think is worth clicking to, and it's on my website, thinkwingradio.com. My watch keeps clunking. I'm sorry. Maybe you can hear that. About recording your police. Very, very interesting that the police stopped an Uber driver.
Right.
And the Uber driver happened to be a full-time lawyer and a part-time Uber driver, and they kept telling him, turn off his cell phone camera. And he kept saying, no, pardon me, but respectfully, I would rather keep it on. And they then lied to him, saying, you know, there's a brand new law that you're not allowed to do. He says, no, I'm a lawyer. I think I would know about that. How brand new is it? Did they pass it like in the last couple of days? Well, you know, there's this law. You can't record it. Well, yes, I can. And actually, you can apparently you can film any public event. Anybody who's like on a public street,
right.
You can record. And as long as you do not interfere with the police doing their business, they can tell you to stand back. They can tell you not to get in the way or interfere, but they can't tell you not to film them.
Right.
So this is a really interesting video that you should go to my website and click on, thinkwingradio.com. Let's see. And then there's the veterinarian, what I'm calling the murderous Montrose veterinarian. That apparently she and her boyfriend, both of them were attached in estranged marriages, and they started talking about knocking off their estranged spouses, and they found the best possible hitman, an undercover one. So, yeah, there's a little bit of that. And also, now, I have been talking over the last several weeks about this writ of mandamus going before the Supreme Court, that it has actually gotten past several review stages. The most recent was a review by, I think it was Ginsburg, who decided that it was worth presenting to the rest of the justices to see if it might be worth an oral hearing. The writ of mandamus demands that the Supreme Court order new elections. And I think that the reason that it has gotten as far as it has is because it presents a very interesting legal theory. Apparently, there's something in Article 4, and I really should have it in front of me, but I don't, forgive me. But there is something in Article 4 about elections and external interference due to, like, invasion or something of that nature. And the argument, and I've had people laugh at this, but apparently the Supreme Court doesn't think it's funny. The argument is that the Russians invaded our cyberspace, and therefore, we did actually experience a modern version of an invasion which interfered with the election, and therefore, perhaps the election should be done over, starting all the way back to the primaries from any of the federal or even local elections that might have been affected by this cyber invasion. So this week, March 17th, which I believe is Friday, the justices will be handed, all the justices will be handed a copy of this writ of mandamus, and if four of the eight justices agree, it'll go for oral hearings. Now, there is a precedent, not on a national level, but on a state level. I believe there was a state legislator in Pennsylvania who went to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and was eventually awarded a victory in an election that he lost because the election was so tainted. And, you know, we're living in a time when anything can happen. And if the justices decide that this writ of mandamus has merit, you know, judges are like God. They can pretty much do anything they want as long as they can justify it with precedent and legal terms. So they could do anything from saying, nah, never mind, to, okay, we'll just start the elections over, and any election that looks tainted, we'll just do it over. Which, you know, in Michigan could have some consequences because they had, like, ballot boxes that somehow got forgotten.
Right.
Or they can just say, you know what, we're going to make Hillary president. She won the popular vote. We feel that the election was so tainted that the other candidate has a legitimate claim. I mean, they can do, I'm not saying that they will do this, or they should do this. I'm just saying anything can happen. When it goes to the court, trust me, I've been in front of a judge. They're God.
Mm-hmm.
They can make anything happen that they want to. So there's that. And that will be distributed Friday. I don't know what the timeline is after that. I need to see when they do any updates. When do they decide, Chris, do you know, when do they decide, when are the terms? I mean, is it like June they start hearing stuff, or is it fixed, or?
Actually, I'm going to tell you honestly, I don't keep up with that calendar very well because it usually surprises me when I'm sitting out there.
Surprises everybody.
Yeah, I do remember that, for instance, the case related to gay marriage came down in June.
I think
a lot of cases do roll out there. But,
I think May, June is when they start hearing cases.
So a lot of cases I know that came out right there because I sort of remember where I was when people were celebrating.
So, again, touting my own website, thinkwingradio.com, if you go to today's post, and I have to tell you, my posts have been getting very sloppy lately because whatever they're doing at WordPress, it's just not replicating my formatting. So I'm really, really suffering here, and it's one of the reasons that I keep coming to the station later than I would like. But two things that you can click on is the video of this lawyer instructing the cops in the law. And also a much lengthier explanation with referential links on this writ of mandamus, which first came to my attention back in, like, late January. And I've sort of been following this story. So we'll see how that goes. And then just to start off with something, well, I guess I've already started off, but to restart with something a little more mundane, daylight savings time. There is an article that says in Newsweek, daylight savings time makes people clumsy, lazy, and sick. And I was talking with my sister on the way here, and actually she mentioned to me that insurance companies know that after around the change of time, accidents go up. So they're paying more money in claims. I know in retail, because I worked weekends, that every time there was a change in time, people either came to work an hour early or an hour late, depending on which time change it was.
Right.
And I know personally, I feel jet lagged for like 2 weeks usually after the time change, which might give you a hint that I'm a terrible traveler. But it did.
But you know, if you started doing your sit-ups at 1:55 and you finished at 3:05. Then, you know, essentially you could stretch about, you know, 15 minutes
or so. Do you
know
when I do a sit-up?
Into an hour and 15
when
minutes.
When I get up from the sofa watching TV, I am sitting up. And I do that at least a half a dozen times a day. So I'm doing my daily sit-ups. But the point that came up in my conversation with my sister, you should see my exercises. Chris is looking at my exercise that I do, but you can't see it because it's radio. You know, it occurred to me that maybe the only good thing, if there is any, about having a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican president, you know, they keep claiming that they're in favor of personal choice, even if you can't afford the choice.
Right.
I want to have a personal choice not to go on time change.
Oh, okay.
I want them to pass a law saying I have a personal right whether or not I want to go spring forward or fall back.
Right.
I want to have that, and it's the only damn thing this government is probably good for, is the personal choice on daylight saving
time. Right, at least with an entire, you know, Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican White House administration, et cetera, you have a...
And in this administration, White House has never been so accurate.
You can only half blame Obama.
Which half? Spring forward or fall back?
No, I'm saying with all these houses and chambers being controlled by the Republicans, you can only half blame Obama now.
Oh, I guess, okay. Anyway, it's kind of like a free-for-all here. Chris Sampson is my guest, but it can be cyber or anything. 713-526-5738. I can see that the call boards are not lighting up, so maybe we haven't quite found the topic that gets people on fire. We've already talked about the murderous Montrose veterinarian, instructive attorney telling police the law. Here's something kind of interesting. There was a Jordanian soldier that 20-some years ago killed 7 Israeli schoolgirls. And he was being held in Jordan. And after 20 years, he was released, which may seem inadequate. But you have to remember that, of course, Jordan isn't one of these places. But in countries that don't have the death penalty, 20 years is not uncommon for a murder.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that...
And they're 20 hard years in many of these places.
Well, I imagine that a Jordanian prison isn't a country club.
Right.
Most prisons aren't, some less so than others.
Right.
But here's the thing that got me. And, you know, I don't necessarily want to get into this whole Israel-Palestinian-Arab thing. We all have very hardcore views on this. I mean, I am not blind. Well, anyhow, I'm not going to get into this too much. I know that the Palestinians have done stuff. I know that the Israelis have done stuff. But here's the thing that upset me. Headline was 20 years after 7 Israeli schoolgirls were killed. And this is from the Washington Post, by the way, not like some Israeli news organization. 20 years after seven Israeli schoolgirls were killed, some hail Jordanian shooter as a hero upon his release. Now, here's the thing that specifically troubled me about that. If you want to conduct a war, you know, you can make a case that terrorism against police is war because they're adults and they're serving the government. That sniping or killing soldiers is war. There's just no way that seven schoolgirls are war. And even one of the Jordanians that was interviewed, and I will admit this is taken out of a much longer context, so you can click on the article and read it and see where I'm excising. But this gentleman said, it is not logic, it is feeling, a sense of revenge, a kind of compensation, a way of dealing with Israelis the same way they deal with Palestinians, killing them outside the law without being punished. And forgive me for the pronunciation, said Oraib al-Rantawi, director of the Amman-based Al-Quds Center for Political Studies. He went on to say it is not shocking to see Jordanians supporting this guy, despite the fact what he did is not something you could feel honorable about. And that's the thing that troubles me, is, you know, we're looking at building a border wall to stop people coming into the United States from working illegally, but working, joining their families, starting businesses, doing work Americans don't want. And this isn't something that I'm saying because I favor illegal immigration. I'm just saying that we want to build a wall to stop those people. Now, look at the Israelis. The Israelis are building walls. I've seen documentaries, and I have to say, the honest, peaceful, law-abiding Arabs who live on the West Bank, who in many cases commute into Israel to work, their lives are very, very hard. The Israelis build walls. Now, they're not building walls necessarily against the Arabs who want to come into Israel or work for Israelis in the West Bank to do jobs or start businesses. And I mean, I know there are specific laws that probably we could get into. They build walls because people are trying to kill them. Mm-hmm. Do you know that several years ago, when Rick Perry was governor, there was a gunfight in Tijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently one or two or three stray bullets strayed from Tijuana across the border into El Paso.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick Perry actually blamed that on Obama. You see what Obama's doing? He can't even protect us from stray bullets coming from Mexico.
Right.
And it's like, what the hell is he, Superman, that he's supposed to fly out of the White House, stand in front of the bullets, and have them bounce off his chest? So, you know, when we're looking at the Arab-Israeli situation, I think we have to acknowledge that there has been an escalation of reasons over the decades for both sides to be fearful and distrustful of the other. You cannot simply criticize the Israelis without understanding the mindset of why they are doing today what they're doing after decades of war, threatened war, terrorist attacks, civilian bombings, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it really isn't that different from what I say about looking at historical figures and judging them by the standards of today's ethics and morality and law. That it's fair to assess them,
right?
But they need to be judged in the context of their times. Things that we would consider horrible in the context of their times may have been relatively enlightened.
Well, there's two things in there.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Station ID, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90. Yes, it is. I've been yak. And I've actually been stopping you from yakking.
No, that's okay.
Which is something of an accomplishment, I am learning.
Quite an accomplishment.
So you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. My guest is cyber expert and interesting person Chris Sampson. Bob Gartner is on the controls. Thank goodness somebody is. And I have a website, thinkwingradio.com, where you can find links to all the stuff I talk about and stuff I don't have time to get to. And you can follow me on Twitter at thinkwingradio. And, of course, kpft.org is how you support this show and this station. Okay, Chris, you wanted to say something,
yeah,
and then I'll let Gary on. And actually, the phone number, I have to keep remembering to say the phone number, 713-526-5738. We're basically open forum, but Chris is here if you want to talk cyber stuff or anything he has an opinion on.
Or ISIS, which is, I'm going to lead into some terrorism discussion for a second.
713-526-5738. And apparently I'm talking so long that people are dropping off the phone like flies.
Juarez.
I'm sorry? Juarez. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Juarez and Tijuana, sister cities.
Not far enough west on
that. But I seem to remember El Paso getting into it. But
yeah.
Anyway.
So a little bit about the what I call the grievance pool. And a good buddy of mine, Mubin Sheikh, who's a de-radicalization or counter-radicalization expert, we talk about this quite a bit, in the fact that if you really want to stop terrorism, you're going to have to understand the grievances, and you're going to have to do everything you can to alleviate them, to reset the narrative around them, and more important, sort of like we saw with the Yemen raid, you can't do things that enable your opponents to feed off of that like kerosene.
You have to, it comes down to what it often is, which is knowing history and understanding how things got to where they are.
True.
You can't just take snapshots in time and say that's why.
Yeah, and in order to, what you're doing when you do that is essentially you're developing a narrative. And a really good, speaking of cyber experts, a good buddy of mine was featured in a CNN segment this last week.
Is that
John Nichols.
Ah.
And John was asked, about a hacker that I wrote about in Hacking ISIS named Junaid Hussein, who was a kid from Birmingham, and he went to Syria eventually and was recruiting, and he was also a hacker who was involved in trying to recruit for CCA and various hacker groups. And the lady who was asking him these questions says, how does a kid go from, like, this environment in Birmingham? And she had met his parents, and they apparently really cared about him, and the people around seemed to have enough of a care about him that she saw a fabric, right? And he says, it's all in the narrative. And I think that is so true because, see, from our view, why would someone leave this, neighborhood where things are okay? It may not be perfect, but it's okay. That you want to go and you want to go live in Syria, and you want to be in the middle of a civil war, and you want to kill people? What sense does that make? But change the narrative. You're a Muslim living in Birmingham. You don't fit. You're reminded you don't fit. You're constantly reminded you don't fit. And yet, the people that you claim to identify with or you feel some sort of attachment with seem to be under attack somewhere else. And who are they under attack by? So when you start listening to that narrative, you go, well, wait a minute, what am I doing here? Wouldn't you go fight for whoever you feel your people are, even if they transcended your country? So maybe like in the case of my Scottish ancestry, would I go fight for Scotland if I really had to, if it really meant that I should? Could that narrative work upon me? Or if you're an Italian and you see that someone's really destroying your country that you really identify with, would you want to maybe leave and go defend where you come from? And that's really sort of what, when we talk about what the grievances, that's really also where that narrative comes in. Because if you only have a one-sided view of a grievance, you simply can't sit down at the table and solve the problem.
Well, we're going to, because you've sort of been ignoring callers, so I'm going to start getting to phone calls in just a minute. I just want to say one thing, though, that the points you're making all come back to essentially assimilation.
Mm-hmm.
How well does a society admit, and I'm not going to use the word assimilate so much, but incorporate, take in, make welcome, become one with the people that come to your country. Now, in the United States, it used to be basically an Anglo-Saxon country. I constantly tell people I'm not an Anglo. I'm all Eastern European. Mm-hmm. We didn't come within a couple of thousand miles of Anglos.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have multiple generations of people that can't say, well, I'm Irish-American, I'm Scottish-American, I'm German-American. It's like, well, I'm like from six different countries and a slave and a Native American. And, I'm a mutt. I'm just an American.
I'm a Heinz 57 on mom's side and a Heinz 58 on dad's.
Exactly.
Right.
So you have to get to that point. Anyhow, I guess Bob wants MOD to be our first caller online because that's highlighted. So MOD, should I call you MOD or MOD? What should I do here?
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
I've been
leveraged by buddies of mine to use MOD.
Okay.
Master of Disaster.
Ah, well, that's worrying.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah, that's worrying. Go ahead.
I wanted to say fun facts or maybe, things that are ironic.
Okay.
Russia's largest bank, it's SBER Bank,
mm-hmm.
Has confirmed the hiring of the consultant firm, the Podesta Group, Tony Podesta,
mm-hmm.
the elder brother of John Podesta, who's chaired Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign just of recent, has already been paid for 6 months lobbying $170,000 last year.
Who reported this?
The Daily Caller and also the Test Group.
So you're talking about a highly respectable and reliable news source.
Yeah, that's the only way I go, Mike. You know that.
Well, there's alternative news and there's alternative news.
Well, the ironic thing is, as I provide the source, New York Times or, Wall Street Journal in the last.
You know what? I don't want to get into a big argument with you because I know you and I kind of see things from sort of opposite perspectives. And I appreciate your calling. I appreciate your calling because it's all stuff that people talk about.
Or maybe it's just facts.
Or maybe it just isn't. Maybe
what do you say? Well, New York Times isn't facts?
No, I'm saying the Daily Caller maybe isn't facts. Let me just say this. I'm not entirely against what you might call alternative news sources.
New York Times?
No, I'm not talking about the New York Times. I'm talking about things like alternet.org. I'm talking about things like the Daily.
We don't need to go around the dance floor on the last, requested source information I provided, Mike.
Sources matter because the way they write a piece matters and where they get their information matters. So, like, if they get their information from RT or Sputnik, or if they make stuff up to make it a little bit more exciting, or if they just aren't that conversant in the details and they're sloppy with their language, that's unintentional and it's still inaccurate.
Yeah, well, I do my research, and it's against sourced information,
I'd like to ask you a question.
Let him make his point, and then you can ask his question. All right, so make your point, and then Chris wants to ask you something.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, it's the largest bank in Russia, and they're using the Podesta consulting firm to counter the sanctions that Obama's had placed, from past. And they're also with the business of sourced uranium out of a company out of Ukraine. And that's through the Clinton Foundation. But I'll respond to what's his name?
Chris Sampson.
Chris. Hey, Chris.
Okay, real quick about news sourcing. Daily Caller gets its source from somewhere. New York Times gets their information from somewhere. So where are they getting their documents from? When you read these papers, that's what I would encourage that you pass on to the next listener. Like when you tell me, I read this at the Daily Caller, it's like, okay, that's cool. But where did they get that information? Because that's how I read the paper. To me, the news that you and I see or read is the layer at the top. And then behind that is a whole bunch of information that either can be bunk, or it's sourced. And the best places that I like to read, the reason why I like to read them is that they'll tell me immediately where the sources are, and then I can bypass them and immediately tell that the journalist has given me a point of view, even if it's very accurate. But I'm already reading a Senate report or a NATO report or, someone's, cyber white paper instead of a reporter's version of that information.
Well,
so,
to be fair,
I don't know what information you're using.
Hold on a second. I'm actually going to be on your side for a second. I think that to be fair, it is so common, and this is not recent; it's old. It's so common to use anonymous sourcing, a highly placed
mm-hmm.
source said
sure.
that. I love citations. One of the things I loved about this SCOTUS article about the writ of mandamus is you could actually go and look at the legal document. There
right.
was a link to the legal document online.
Right.
But that isn't common.
But let's look at the case that you mentioned in here when we talked about Luis Mensch and the coverage about the Russians. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm not going to get into anything about Luis personally or whatever I think or whatever else. There's some people who are making us, you know, they're rendering opinions these days. There are a lot of facts in those stories that are essentially not so. When it comes from a computer point of view or a hacker point of view, there is a lot of assumption based on the attempt at getting a scoop that people bought into, and then the writing starts compounding it and has to live up to it.
The opinion becomes the news.
And the opinion becomes the news, right? So there's this opinion that it got lobbed, for instance, and I'm going to leave it as a theory, someone's theory, that a hacker busted in in Czech Republic. I'm older than that.
Yeah, me
in Czech,
too.
Czech Republic, that this person was at the nexus of the Anthony Weiner bust because of a site that he had been on before for dating and you know, intermingling, and that site had
and
been compromised.
And that basically Weiner was trolled.
Well, not
that's
only
the
that,
argument.
Yeah, that site had been compromised, and therefore she went to the leap that this person had planted information into the stream that wound up on his computer. Now, here's the problem. There is zero data in the cyber world, in the data world that I live in, that's all fact-based, that would back that up even a little bit. And yet it kept getting news, and it kept getting followers from people who, when they read that, it sounded reasonable. Even when I first heard it, I went, okay, it's plausible.
Maybe. It's plausible.
The phrase I would use is, it's plausible. And I do a lot of work.
It's a Mythbuster thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that I do that essentially I have a whole sheet of plausible thoughts that in time I can't tell you where that sheet is because the evidence sheet is so heavy that I don't have time for the plausible sheet anymore after this.
Okay, so, M.O.D., I'm going to let you have the last words
and
on
M.O.D.,
this.
You might be right, by the way. I'm not saying you're wrong, but that's why I want to know where your sources
and
were.
And then I'm going to go on to our next caller. So you want to give us like a wrap-up?
I like to talk sometimes, but Chris, man, that's why I called in because I just wanted to appreciate Mike and Bob and especially having you on because this
man.
Is good stuff.
Well, and I appreciate you calling even though we don't necessarily have the same perspectives. I appreciate your calling and giving us yours truly.
This is why we donate.
Exactly.
How about Consortium News? Do you think that's a source?
Negative.
Reputable side?
Negative.
What is the name?
Consortium News.
I haven't heard of it.
It's the William Bentney.
Yeah.
The former.
Yeah, like last time I was on, he asked about the a former NSA guy that had basically not been in there since Benny, who had not been in since 2001, October 2001, I think.
But he's the chief contributing editor to.
Well, I'm not discounting his service either. So it's his service. But when it comes to hacking, I'm
not
dealing
not
with
hacking,
very modern.
He's reputable though.
Mm. I think his past interpretations of the NSA, his past work, I think is reputable. I think that the blog, I certainly wouldn't write it in any of my books. I wouldn't cite it.
And I think I would wrap up the conversation by saying that you just made a very interesting point, that you can have the same, you can have reputable data and not give it a good interpretation.
Well, I got the question off, Mike, but, you know, we know, like, Judith Miller, who wrote 7 stories in the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
when I used to like the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
for the run-up for the Gulf, the invasion of Iraq.
Right. She had lunch with Scooter Libby, who was telling about how the Aspens were turning.
She was his pinch, yeah.
Yeah, she was
so
fed.
So we know that there's infiltration of what we consider, you know, good news source agencies, and there are not all the journalists are legit, I would say.
Correct.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I definitely spend my time looking, and I think it's convenient to follow what we call CNN news, and I'm not going to follow the tide of fake news. I'm not going to.
Sure.
But
and you know, there's a difference between bad news and fake news. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's just agree that we at least we try.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And then also I'm going to hold Mike's coin on your blog, Mike. You know, I don't know. Did you start using that? I told you, or you had it for a while. I don't know, but we are entitled to our opinions, but not our facts.
We are entitled to our own opinions, but not our own facts. Yes,
right. My dad
I still have it on my card.
A long time ago, Mike. So
yep.
I appreciate that you just have this conversation. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Right, thank you again.
I
take care.
Bye.
All righty. Bye bye. Before I go to Justin, and we do have open lines, and it's time for another station ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 in Houston. Bob Gartner is on controls. My guest is Chris Sampson, the cyber guy. The cyber guy.
I like that better than cyber expert. I don't like the word expert.
Yeah, cyber guy. I like that.
I like analyst and all those things.
713-526-5738. We're more or less open forum. Chris is our guest. He has opinions on everything, as do I. So Justin is next up. You're on the air, Justin. How you doing tonight?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Justin.
Okay, so you're saying that the reputation of sources matter, right?
I think overall, but, you know, I want to take exception to one thing. Talking about the Judith Miller situation.
Right.
MOD used the term infiltrated, that otherwise reputable sources and journalists have been infiltrated. I think that that's a word I wouldn't necessarily agree with. I think what it comes down to is journalistic decision-making,
right,
editorial decision-making. Who do you trust? How many sources do you use? Whether your editor insists on multiple verifications of a story. And all of that is relevant. But right. I think that infiltration implies a different thing.
Well, I think there's a cynicism when it comes to a lot of news, and it kind of isn't held by any one sector. You know, those on the left tend to be very cynical of anything that comes out of Fox News. But frankly, there are times I will watch a segment on Fox News to see what they're saying about a set of facts. Now, I know what I'm watching when I see it, but I'm looking for the set of facts that they're going to cover. And then I'm looking
and
for
the selective
spin.
Editing they may or may not
There may
use.
Be spin. There may not be spin. Any spin. There are some times where I will watch a segment from someone like Catherine Herridge that's a two-minute segment on Iraq, and there's no time for spin. It's in, it's out. It's
anyway, Justin,
anyway,
Justin, you're the caller.
You're up.
Yeah, well,
we're sucking up your time. Sorry, man.
That's all right. Okay. WikiLeaks has not yet proven to have been to have released any doctored emails.
That's not so.
Okay, prove that.
Well, I don't have all their stuff in front of me. However, let's look back at their history, okay? There's been a penchant in WikiLeaks to sort of game things that didn't work within that narrative. And I don't have my sheet here in front of me here, but if you go look back, a few things about WikiLeaks. And from the beginning, WikiLeaks was not a multiple, you know, like a pot of people who were doing this. It was basically Julian Assange's idea with Daniel Domscheitberg, otherwise known as Daniel Schmidt. And he was very clear in his book, when he wrote his book about what it was like to work with Assange for about 5 years, that a lot of that was smoke and mirrors. So we would hear things about how hackers hit the server, and that's why they were having problems. And I was someone believing that on the other end. I really thought that the reason why I couldn't get there in 2010 or 2009 when I was looking at things was because they'd been hit by a server attack. Truth was, they have a bad server. And they would fool the people outside. And then they would tell the people that they had employees. Like they had a lawyer named Jay Lim. Unfortunately, Jay Lim is actually Julian Assange.
Or maybe John Barron.
Or just like John Barron with Donald Trump. So then there was one document, and I'd have to look it up, and I invite you to go, you know, go dig into it. And I hate to send people to research. I'd rather tell you, to be honest.
Well, let me say
but
this.
They very specifically did put something through and then turn around and said, yes, but see, we knew it. And see, that's how you can see that.
But
let me tell you
what the problem is. And this really goes back to the last time I had you on the show, when we had a very precise topic. How can you even show somebody who doesn't understand cyber what the proof is looking right at the cyber? So,
well, not cyber. I mean, again, if I just ditch the cyber side, right, if I simply look at the releases from a historical point of view,
no,
the Bill Heller hoax.
But Justin is saying prove it. And the problem is proving it.
No, you're right.
No, I understand his argument. Go ahead.
Look, honestly, this is just an attempt to discredit his reputation, to make it seem like he is in cahoots with Russia somehow to advance this whole Trump-Russia narrative that's completely bunk, to which there is no basis at all. That's the bunk.
Or is it confirmation bias?
Can I ask you a question?
Or is it your confirmation bias?
Quick question. No, seriously. Okay. Number one, have you ever had 12 shows on RT? Have you ever had 12 shows on RT? With you as the envisioned producer and the visionary for a show?
Are you suggesting you know him?
No, I'm asking.
I'm asking our caller if he has, because I've never had that, and I've been in entertainment business for now 20 years.
I don't understand. What you're
well, Julian Assange, when he promised in October 2010 to release documents on the corruption in Russia, he didn't do that. He didn't release any of those documents.
Okay,
he claimed he was going to out everybody, right? And then within 1 year, less than 1 year, he is on RT with 12 segments to sit there and interview like Hassan.
Okay, you see, my original thought was you were implying that Justin might have been.
No, and that's actually the point, is that something that is given to every one of us commonly, like the ability to have speech, okay? Justin has speech, I have speech. But see, I'm on the radio, right? And actually, it is a little bit of a privilege to be able to give radio, even if it's volunteer. We're volunteer.
We're
radio,
volunteers.
Right? But what if someone called you up? What if someone called you up and said, "Hey, Mike, I really like your view, and I want you to come have 12 shows." And you didn't sort of work your way in the way it works around here at KPFT. Someone hands you a show and outright tells you that you want a show. But what were you threatening them a year ago? A year ago, I'm going to out you. I'm going to show you you're corrupt, and I'm going to show all of your oligarchs and how corrupt. Except for a year later, no, I'm on Russian television, and I'm doing my favorite little interviews, and I'm a celebrity now. So I'm sorry. I think that the principle of WikiLeaks, I have no problem with that. A whistleblower website, like Open Secrets is what Daniel Schmidt opened up.
Except that they're always American.
No, Daniel Schmidt's a German.
Daniel Schmidt opened up. I mean, most of what they disclose. And Justin,
true.
And Justin, as the caller, I swear I'm going to let you talk. But
Open Secrets is an alternative, is exactly the point of view that I'm saying. You have CryptoMe and you have Open Secrets and other groups have come out and did that. And the thing is, what they did was said, we can't become an organization built in a personality. It cannot become the Julian Assange Defense Fund.
I think that, and you know what? I'm not going to say what I think right now. Justin, you've been listening to us talking. What is on your mind to say? Apparently, well, I'm not going to say apparently. I'm going to ask you what you have on your mind to say.
Hello?
Yeah, we're here. We're listening now.
Well, it's just like the whole Russia narrative, Russia-Trump narrative. Like, Trump was the only candidate willing to have at least a detente when Hillary Clinton and Obama were ratcheting up tensions. So it aligns very conveniently with NATO and the military-industrial complex's interest to push NATO alliances up to Eastern European countries right along Russia's border. I find all these aspersions to Julian Assange's character, like, not credible because of the interests aligned against any detente with Russia.
Well, detente is supposed to be a two-way street. It's not they take, we give. So, but all of a sudden, the lines are lighting up, as it always does in the last 18 minutes of the show. So I appreciate your calling, Justin. I'm sorry we didn't give you more
time.
Same
here, Justin.
All right, take care. Let's see, who's up next? I think it's Greg. Is Greg up next? Line one? Yes, maybe. Greg, I think you're on the air. You there?
I'm going to jump off. This is MOD. I just want to ask Chris, does he think or know of limited hangout like Snowden or Assange? I'll get back off. Bye, guys.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so, Bob, who's up next? We got at least three callers on the line. Jeff? Okay, Jeff, you're on the air. You there?
Hey, Mr. Koenig, how are you tonight?
Hey, actually, it's Honig with an H. Koenig means king and Honig means honey, and it's just always very tricky.
Actually, I said Koenig, but that's okay.
All right, whatever. I shouldn't be that nitpicky about it at the age of 66.
Oh, quit trying to play the age game.
Oh, man, the age game matters. It gives me perspective. But anyhow, go ahead. Yes. What are you calling about?
Well, I have 2 points I'd like to make.
All right.
Number one, I'd seriously doubt if the insane orange clown president knows that George Washington was elected unanimously. So his need to be the most elected president in history has a fundamental problem. And in a way, I think the media should be able to point that out to him. But why he has to insist that he had the most successfully attended inauguration in the history of the world. and on top of that, all the artists that downright refused to perform. Where does he get off calling things fake news when he's more than capable of producing fake information?
Alternative facts. He lives in his own reality.
Raw narcissism.
Yeah.
Pathological, lying, raw narcissism.
It's a denial of anything that conflicts with his view of things. And, I mean, I guess you can't entirely understand it unless you've either studied it or live it. He's a very disturbed man. I think that that's the only rational, if I may use that word, explanation. And unfortunately, we have an irrational leader in our government. And we have other people. Grover Norquist, that's the name I can never remember. He once said, all I want is a president who can sign the legislation that Congress passes. All he needs is a functional signature hand.
Right.
And I think right now the Republicans realize that they probably have that. And they probably have a limited window to have that.
Right.
Because either the 2018 elections are going to change things, or there's going to be an impeachment or 25th Amendment. Something. There's going to be something. He's not going to finish out 4 years. On that, I am willing to bank. So they're looking at the Grover Norquist limited window of a functioning signature hand.
Right.
And, of course, Grover Norquist, who is not an anarchist but an oligarchist, has all the business in the world of trying to steer this country in one direction or any other.
Now, would you say Grover Norquist? I've never thought of him as an oligarchist. I've always thought of him as just so libertarian that he says he wants government so small that he can drown it in the bathtub.
Right.
I think that that's highly metaphorical. I think what he really means is that he just wants a government that, as libertarians see it typically, is a government that can conduct foreign affairs,
right?
A government that can serve for the common defense, and for everything else, everybody's on their own. There are no government services.
A very interesting thing about Grover Norquist and the D.C. Problems, if you will. We have a guy in the White House right now named Sebastian Gorka, and his name has been making some of the national security circles because he's of the Frank Gaffney, Pam Geller school of Islamophobic lunacy, essentially. Not based in any scholarship whatsoever. It's just this sort of cult of I hate a Muslim, and that's what I'm going to stand for, and they're the problem. That's what he stands for. So you have Grover Norquist essentially on the same rhetorical side of the fence and many other issues with the Republicans until they turn on him because his wife's Muslim. And he's been one of those people that, I mean, when you think of how extreme he pulls the government to the right for the anti-tax point of view,
well,
now
it's funny,
all of a sudden
he's
got to sit in the same tub with those folks.
There was this white supremacist who was writing one of these white supremacist blogs, and it turned out that he had concealed the fact that he had a Jewish wife. So his credibility was instantly lost.
Right.
I'm sorry.
You know,
go ahead, Jeff.
It's fascinating that a Korean wife did in Senator Graham.
Hmm. How so? I mean, I remember that he had an Asian wife. How so did she do him in precisely?
Wendy.
I don't think Republicans were willing to accept then. They are now willing to accept a Czech Republic citizen as first lady. But
not to mention the fact that they're willing to accept the Asian wife of the majority leader in the Senate as a cabinet member. Mm-hmm. Cho? Mm-hmm. Cho, what's her name?
No argument. I'm talking time and place.
Of course,
I'm actually... In my case, I was born in Japan, and it was nice of them enough to accept me long enough for me to get out of there. I mean, you know, I could have been eliminated. One point further I want to make is that, as I said, the insane orange clown president that we have, I agree with you. I don't think he's going to make it 4 years. But the people that are going to impeach him are Republicans.
Which would be... strange irony.
You know, with Nixon, they said that it just took the Republicans getting on board the impeachment train for
right.
Nixon
You know, I thought about this last week, and really, you know, there was something that one of the lower-end name of a Republicans, meaning we haven't had him, his name sink in yet, he said something on CNN that showed me he was really ready to watch out for his own hide, and I thought that's exactly what it's going to be that's going to take this guy down, because Ryan popped up right behind him and was speaking, and I thought that's really all you guys have to do is recognize that if you were to impeach Trump, you're going to have still the Republican power in your hand, at least for a period of time. So you don't have that to worry about. But you could also show, you know, by basically dropping him off at the corner and driving on, you know, you could prove to somebody that you actually still like your country, even if we might disagree.
But the problem, of course, is that in the midst of all that, probably nothing else can get passed.
Well,
so
that's
they'll
an
lose
unfortunate
their
truth.
Window.
That's an
unfortunate truth.
But it's an unfortunate truth because, you know, many of them came there with pet projects. But ultimately, all of their pet projects will die at this rate. You know, and you can see them seeing that writing on the wall.
And Justin,
they're counting the resistance votes now down to just a handful of votes.
And Jeff, did you hear about Ryan saying that young people are paying more and mm-hmm. old people and sick people are paying less, and it's not fair that healthy people are subsidizing sick people? And it's like, don't you understand the concept of insurance? You know, that's
the fundamentals of insurance.
Yeah, I mean, that's why people that don't have accidents are paying insurance to cover the people that do have accidents in case they are one of them. It's crazy.
I'm going to leave you with one last thought.
Okay.
I'm really surprised that Bannon is not getting the coverage that he should for his lunatic fringe ideas and the fact that he's pretty much in control of the White House.
I think it has to do with what the hell do you cover first? There's just so much craziness to cover. It's just, I mean, there's only so much blog space. There's only so much print space. I mean, the fact is, if you have a video that runs more than 2 minutes, people aren't going to watch it.
Right.
So it's like, how do you cover all the insanity? And that itself becomes a cover, in another sense, for the insanity.
And Jeff, all I can say is, if you'll grab one tentacle and Mike grabs another tentacle and I grab another one, maybe.
That even if we both grab two tentacles, that still leaves four tentacles, and God only knows what they're up to.
We'll try.
Ask any woman.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to leave that between y'all and him.
Women know about octopuses. I keep hearing stories. Okay, well, Jeff has left us. I guess then we have Greg back on the line. So, Greg, in your other alternate personality.
It wasn't me. I can tell you that wasn't me.
Okay.
But my question was about other groups besides WikiLeaks, like Anonymous and some of the other groups that have done, like, CyberSpaceX or CyberX over recent years, mm-hmm. and how effective are they going to be this time in terms of the kind of actions they may take?
Before Chris answers that, I just want to make a point that, you know, we look at groups like Anonymous, and I find it very common. It depends on whose ox they're goring.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, Anonymous is great. They're after Trump. Oh, Anonymous is terrible. They're after Hillary. I mean, it really depends on whose ox is gored.
It
so
is.
You need a consistent philosophical position for people like
that.
It is
like an amoeba. I mean, it really is a group of them can decide to go on one action, and another group of them can go on another action, and they don't meet in the middle. There is, you know, in the history of Anonymous, there mostly is a left towards libertarian ilk, you know, overall.
Well, actually, that would be considered right libertarian. Well, anarchist.
To the left in the sense of, you know, social justice, you know, what some people call the social justice warrior movement, which I think is perfectly fine. Sure, what's the problem? You have that side, so they'll, you know, launch an attack on Westboro Baptist Church or the KKK. And
that's like yay.
Yeah, you know, and it's easy to cheer for that. But, you know, what has been strange is you'll see a very pro-Trump Anonymous post from
I think, you know, December or maybe November. It kind of threw us off a little bit. And I had to remind people who were a little surprised by that. Oh, they've all turned to a Well, no, they haven't all turned to anything.
It's an anarchic group.
It's an anarchic group. Someone in the group who still likes the Guy Fawkes face decided to do a Trump will tear down the Illuminati point of view. And, you know, I might not agree with that, but I can actually understand that someone who does agree with that would take the time to go out and have that message. So, you know.
So, Greg?
But other groups,
you've got a minute, Greg, and then I have to start a sign-off process.
Yeah, you asked about the capability of other groups.
Yeah, that's the main group that I was thinking about, and I couldn't think of too many other ones other than Anonymous and WikiLeaks. And it's kind of interesting how somebody had said this a long time ago that if you took and you really took a WikiLeaks away from Julian Assange and he had to leave the embassy, he would just be another person in the crowd.
Well, except for all the indictments and extradition stuff that would start.
And you know, I said something to Justin earlier about Julian Assange. I don't have a personal beef against Assange about who he is, what he's about. What I have a problem with is that when I kept watching the history and got further involved in paying attention to the inner details of that organization, it was not what it had appeared to be for the first several years. And frankly, I just don't like someone lying to me. So if their server was just, you know, incompetent and they came out later and said, yeah, the truth is we had one server and we were hobnobbing it, that's honest. But when you've spent all these years playing smoke and mirrors about every release, including, frankly, the idea, and because this is the topic that we talked about that had me come on in the first place, was the idea that we just leaked the CIA arsenal. I watched that speech he gave this week. It's nonsense. I mean, what they leaked today was about the same amount of knowledge that if you go to an antivirus company and you go through all of the things that they hoard, or you go to cybersecurity companies that also pull these phones apart and gadgets apart, it was actually a knowledge base. And they took a knowledge base and leaked that knowledge base out to the world as a way to say, ha, we've embarrassed you. We thwarted you. And that's really, when you actually look at what the arsenal would be, could be, and probably is, then you realize that that's all this was we just embarrassed you again. Mm. Okay, and to me, that has no real aim when it comes to improving personal privacy online or transparency. None of those things happen from his actions. So all of his actions should be seen as sort of a circus, in my view.
All right. Greg, you want to take a few seconds to wrap up, and then I have 90 seconds to get off the air.
No, I'll just say I enjoy the show as always, and I love the topic, and it's been very informative.
Well, thank you so much for calling. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. You can visit my website at thinkwingradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at thinkwingradio. I have a Facebook page, Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig. And you can support KPFT and keep this show and this station on the air by going to kpft.org and donating $5, $50, $500, whatever it is you can manage, and vehicles. We take vehicles, too. Jose Juan Flores is going to be up next with Jazz Latino. And David Letterman came up with a quote, and forgive me, it's a little clunky, but he said in an article, and I have the link, "We don't need more confirmation that there's something wrong with Donald Trump. Let's instead find ways to rebuild what is rational. And the Democrats, damn it, get a little backbone, get a little spine. The only person I can trust anymore is Al Franken, who has a great brain and a great heart. I believe what he says." That's from David Letterman. Okay, everybody, have a great week. I'll be back next Monday. I have 15 seconds left to fill. So I'll throw out one more quote from David Fowler, just sort of on nothing in particular. Do we send people to prison as punishment, or do we send people to prison for punishment? Deep thoughts. Juan Flores up next. Stay tuned. Take care.
Martini returns, a three-night musical celebration. Pink Martini draws inspiration from music all over the world, crossing multiple genres. Pink Martini returns with their upbeat multilingual repertoire of Latin, classical, big band, samba, pop, and jazz music. The group returns to Jones Hall with performances on March 17th, 18th, and 19th. More information and tickets are available at HoustonSymphony.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Support KPFT by donating your unwanted vehicle. No matter if it's a car, motorcycle, boat, or RV, when you make a donation, your vehicle is resold at an auto auction, and the proceeds help to support KPFT programming. To donate your vehicle to KPFT, call 1-855-KPFT-CAR. That's 1-855-573-8227. And your car doesn't always have to be running either, but it does have to have an engine and be towable. And you must be the legal title holder. There's no cost to you, and you help out the station you enjoy with your vehicle donation. Again, to donate your vehicle to KPFT, call 1-855-KPFT-CAR. That's 1-855-573-8227. Thanks for your support. This is KPFT Houston. This is KPFT Houston.